On Tech News Today, eBay got hacked, so change your password. Also, LinkedIn will now tell you if you're hot or not, and Google may want to send ads to your thermostat. All that and more coming up right now.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, May 21st, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Citrix ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with Citrix ShareFile. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter TNT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple and Android devices are worth at Gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Tech News Today explores the big stories of the day with some of the world's best journalists. Our guest co-anchor today is Seth Figerman, business reporter for Mashable. Welcome, Seth.
Well, thank you for having me.
So what sort of things do you cover for Mashable?
Oh, mostly social media companies, the big tech stocks, and some startups here and there. We cover the full gamut of things.
Wonderful. Well, we like having Mashable people on the show, and this is your first time on Tech News Today, is that right?
It is. Big moment.
Fantastic. It's a big moment for us, too. So we're really glad you're here. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, let's get to the news. So the big news today is that eBay got hacked. That's right. The company posted a statement urging users to change their passwords, saying that the attackers, quote, compromised a database containing encrypted passwords and other non-financial data, unquote. Eric Hesseldahl is a senior editor for Recode, specializing in enterprise computing and also security, and he joins us right now. Welcome, Eric.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
So what kind of information did the hackers steal?
Well, one thing we know is that they were able to penetrate the eBay internal corporate network, and they did that by way of using stolen employee credentials, so we'll start there. What we understand is that the database that they compromised included encrypted passwords, physical address, email address, but no financial information.
I see. So both consumer and customer information and also employee information. Does that information taken from the employees enable them to sort of own the network and get other information not disclosed, do you think?
Yeah, that's, I think, what the analysis has shown is that they were able to root around to a certain extent within the network, but they weren't able, for instance, they weren't able to get over to, say, the PayPal network. So none of the financial information stored in PayPal seems to have been affected. They also weren't able to do any improper behavior like, you know, list something incorrectly or fake, you know, do any fake auction listings on behalf of people, accounts they might have penetrated. Nothing like that yet.
They weren't unable to post photos that had a reflection of the naked seller in the background or anything.
Right.
You don't want that on eBay.
Like no information yet that we know of.
All right, cool. Well, so when did this attack happen? Is this a recent event?
Late February, early March, and apparently it was only discovered about 2 weeks ago. So there's usually a bit of a disconnect between when something like this is discovered and when it's disclosed. And so now eBay says that it's working with law enforcement. I presume that means the FBI. So we'll see maybe more about this as it comes along, as more information. Eventually, there's usually a TikTok in these things about who knew what, when, and how the attack was carried out. My guess is it was probably a spear phishing attack, something like an email attachment or something like that, that tricked an employee into clicking on something. That's usually the way these things happen.
It seems to me that eBay may not have wanted to disclose this right away. There was a weird, like, dribbling out and a sort of accidental disclosure before the actual disclosure. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I don't know very much about that, but what I do know is that there was very briefly like a statement with some placeholder text. It might have been just published too early. Somebody probably pushed their wrong button on the publishing system or something like that. That sort of thing happens. I'm not putting too much credence or importance on that. It looks to me like human error. Somebody saw something before it was intended to be out there, because it was only a matter of hours between the difference between when that first statement was seen and when the full statement came.
There seems to be a pandemic of that sort of activity. It sounds to me like they intended to post one thing, but pasted something and they had the wrong thing in their clipboard. And a similar thing happened to an employee of the Associated Press yesterday. They meant to paste in the remainder of a photo caption, but actually they pasted in the cover letter that they had sent to BuzzFeed in trying to get a job. And that went out and was published internationally. And, of course, the Associated Press is famous for that sort of thing. Years and years ago when they had a, you know, before the web existed, I believe it was Linda Ellerbe sent a passionate love letter out over the wire service to every reporter in the world, basically.
That reminds me of the time. That reminds me of the time that Bloomberg News, well before when Steve Jobs was still very much alive, published a file obituary. Before, you know, years before he was actually seriously ill and died, they were just updating their file in the event that he might have died. And it was published all for about, I don't know, maybe 60 seconds or something like that. But, you know, on the Bloomberg terminal, that's an eternity. And they had to walk it back.
And nowadays, so that sort of thing is crowdsourced on Twitter. Go ahead, Seth Figerman.
Did the AP reporter get a BuzzFeed interview after it went up, or has he been hired yet?
You know they will. BuzzFeed is just that kind of company. I mean, they're going to hear about it, and they're going to hire them probably. So they're certainly not going to work for AP anymore. So hopefully they'll get the job. Now Seth Figerman, you know, we see stories like this all the time, things getting hacked. You always hear about it. Long after, way after when it's too late to do anything about it. How do you manage your passwords and things like that? Do you use a password manager? What do you do to prevent your personal information from getting stolen and used?
So unfortunately, I do not practice what I preach. I would preach that people use services like LastPass and Dashlane and things that kind of randomize your passwords. For me, I sort of have I shouldn't even say this on air, but I have one kind of core part of my password, and then I tweak it for different services, you know, the first couple letters, the last couple letters. But I am not particularly password savvy myself. I just hope that I'm too low profile for anyone to care about. I have no money, so no one should ever want to hack me.
That's very bad advice, Seth. Very, very bad advice.
Oh, I know. That's why I will never write that story.
Eric Hesseldahl, what's the good advice?
Well, the good advice is, well, interesting that Seth should mention Dashlane. I got an email from Dashlane. I think they're going to be running a special specifically keyed to this eBay. This is like, you know, perfect opportunity for password manager products like Dashlane. I happen to use 1Password, and I use it across multiple devices. They have an interesting feature where you can upload your key file to Dropbox or iCloud or something like that, and keep it in sync. So I have it across 2 Macs, iPhone, iPad. If I were to, you know, work another device in there, if I wanted to, I could. So all your passwords, you know, you change it on one, it's updated on the other, so it stays in sync. And it allows you to generate very complicated passwords that you would never be able to remember. You know, they can be 16, 20 characters of all sorts of numbers and symbols and that sort of thing. And that's what you want. That's good password hygiene. It's very easy. It sounds a little more complicated than it actually is to set up. Very easy to use in practice.
Well, Eric Hesseldahl, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today and telling us about the eBay hack. Really appreciate it.
You bet.
All right, you can find Eric Hesseldahl at recode.net, of course, and also on Twitter at AHESS247. Well, we're always talking about security stories, and that's why I want to tell you about Citrix ShareFile. This is an awesome service. You know, hacking somebody's email is way easier than hacking eBay. And we report on hack attacks all the time, and that's why if you're listening to this broadcast, you really shouldn't just put attachments into an email and send it off. There are multiple reasons why you shouldn't do that. The biggest reason is that it's insecure. Another reason is that if your file is large, it may not get to its destination, and you may never even hear about whether or not it reached its destination. And the other reason is, of course, that it's just a pain in the neck to send files around. For example, if you send a single file to 30 people, you're creating 30 copies of that attachment. It's just super inefficient. The right way to send a file is by using Citrix ShareFile. ShareFile will actually enable you to upload your file into the cloud and send a secure link by email. Only the intended recipient, can get that file. No matter who hacks your email, that link is of no use to anyone except the person you sent it to. And then you'll be notified, if you choose to be notified, when that file is downloaded, and you can even determine how many times it's downloaded. For example, you can say, you know what, they can download it 5 times. After the 5th time, no more, not even for the intended recipient. My favorite aspect of all this, of course, is that it notifies you because, you know, we're all busy. You know, we send files to people, and if they haven't opened it yet, they haven't downloaded it, and I contact them to talk about the file, well, I've just wasted my time. But with ShareFile, I can just wait until I'm notified that they've got it. Then I can contact them. We can have a conversation without a lot of back and forth. So ShareFile, again, enables secure links, not attachments. And you can send files of almost any size. One of the common features of almost every corporate firewall is that they won't let attachments into the firewall of a certain size. Some companies have it be, you know, 10 megabytes or something like that. Others, a gigabyte, whatever it is. Doesn't matter. If you've got a 6 gigabyte file that you want to send, and of course, you know, nowadays that's really not that big of a file, it's probably not going to get to anybody who has a large corporate account. So just send it using ShareFile, and it'll get right to them. They can download it, and all your problems for sharing files are solved. So sign up today for a 30-day free trial. No obligation at all. Just go to ShareFile.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage on the upper right, and enter TNT. And remember, visit ShareFile.com, type in TNT. You got to check this out. This is a great service, and I highly recommend it. Well, LinkedIn today introduced a feature for ranking profiles. It's called How You Rank. And it tells you if you're hot or not based on how many times people looked at your LinkedIn profile compared to other people you're connected with on the service. That's right. There's a lot of peer pressure involved, and there's a lot of anxiety and that sort of thing involved, probably by design. Mark Sullivan writes for VentureBeat, and he's here to explain this new feature. Welcome, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Now, why the heck is LinkedIn doing this? It seems like a kind of not very characteristic of LinkedIn to have this kind of, I guess you'd call it social pressure to use the service. Why are they doing it?
Well, like most things on social media sites, new features and such.
We're having some Skype issues here. Hopefully those will get sorted out in a sec. Now, Seth Figerman, you wrote about this as well. Can you tell us why you think that... Why LinkedIn is doing this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that LinkedIn is kind of like Kleenex. Everyone knows what they are. Everyone uses them, but no one really thinks they're that interesting day to day. And I think a feature like this, at its best, you know, makes it a little bit more addictive to use LinkedIn, knowing that your rankings are changing on a daily or monthly basis. There's that competitive hot or not feel, as you put it. I don't know that it will work out like that in the long run. I know that for about 30 minutes after it was released, a lot of people on my Twitter feed were joking about having to check LinkedIn right away. And, you know, if you're LinkedIn, this is an incentive for the user to keep their profile fresh and to try to, share as much as they can and really make more of a daily habit out of it. Whereas right now, I think LinkedIn is at best maybe a quarterly habit for many of its users. You know, it's what you check when you actually need a job. It's not what you check every morning.
Now, we've lost Mark Sullivan thanks to the vagaries of Skype, and we apologize for to we have him back. Jason's telling me we have him back, so let's go ahead and try to get him back. Go ahead. Are you there, Mark?
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay, here. Wonderful. Well, thank you. I was afraid we lost you there. So
I'm glad
you're back. So now, who can see these rankings? Is this just for you personally, or can the public see these?
You can look and see how you're ranking relative to other people in your network. I believe that the main intent, as I was saying before we got cut off, is this is all part of the Who's Viewed Me part of LinkedIn, and LinkedIn gets about 20% of their revenues by upselling to premium accounts. And I believe they're trying to generate activity around the Who's Viewed Me feature, which shows you, you know, just a few, 6 or 7 of the members who have viewed your profile, but to see more, you have to buy one of these premium accounts. And I think this is probably what this is about. They're trying to generate more interest around this in the hopes that more people will buy these premium accounts, which currently accounts for 20% of their business, which is a pretty big chunk, but apparently they're trying to pump that up even more.
Now, Mark Sullivan, I understand that next to the ranking, LinkedIn provides a helpful, easy ways to get more views link. And besides upgrading the service, what other ways are there to get more views?
Well, they tell you things like, I mean, I looked at it last night and, you know, I was kind of in the top 30 percentile, and they told me things like I should go in and complete my profile more. I don't really belong to that many groups on LinkedIn, so it told me to go join more groups and just make more posts, just be more social. Imagine a social network telling you to be more social. That seems to be the message.
I also think, Seth Figerman, I think this is kind of a trend. Google started this with Google Plus very early on. They have the notification, the little bell with the red box that's sort of screaming at you, saying you have all these notifications mm-hmm. happening on Google. And they not only put that on Google Plus, but it's in the browser. When you're looking at Gmail, you're looking at just about any Google service, there it is screaming at you all these notifications. And, of course, Facebook does this kind of thing as well. Is the noise level rising on social networks that are sort of trolling you into using them more and more and more? And will there be a backlash, do you think?
You know, I think that's probably been true for a little while. I think LinkedIn is kind of blessed in a way because so much of its revenue comes from premium services. It doesn't necessarily need you to check it every single day to serve you more ads to make money in the same way that Twitter or Facebook currently do. That said, it clearly would prefer if its users were more active on a daily basis, and which that's what I think this is about. But you're right. I think I've been getting more emails from Twitter and Facebook and Google over the last few weeks. Trying to remind you of what's going on the social network, trying to incentivize you to check back. And you're right, I think the noise level is getting pretty high. I don't know that there's going to be a major backlash. I just think people are going to have to keep updating their notifications preferences because it's getting a little bit crazy.
Now, Mark Sullivan, one final question for you. Do you think this is going to work? I mean, you know, if people feel that their potential bosses and their former coworkers and all these people that are important are seeing that they're low ranking, will people actually be motivated to go in there and engage with LinkedIn more? And if they do that, will that make LinkedIn more successful?
I think it's possible. If you read my article today, I took a fairly skeptical tone on this. But I have to say that I've been receiving emails and tweets this morning from people who are kind of interested in knowing what their rank is and interested in pushing it up. So, you know, I think I'm going to kind of wait and see how much of a gimmick this is or how truly useful it is. It's possible that it could move the dial a little bit for LinkedIn.
To me, it matters who exactly ranks me higher or who's checking my profile. And it's important at least that my mother is checking and thinks very highly of me. So that's good enough for me. I don't really need the LinkedIn ranking. Mark Sullivan, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today.
Thank you.
All right, you can find Mark Sullivan at VentureBeat.com and also on Twitter at TheSullivan. Accept no imitations. A photo startup called Bubbly with an I at the end, announced yesterday that it's been acquired by Dropbox. So what the heck is Bubbly? Well, the company makes an app that lets you create what Google might call a photosphere, essentially a 360-degree top-to-bottom photo that you can pan and zoom to see. The app also takes movies that have a similar effect and... you know, Seth Figerman, this is kind of a cool effect that I don't think is really mainstream, you know, super heavy use type of a thing. You know, since Google put photospheres into more devices, it used to be available only on the Nexus phones. You know, I don't see these things popping up everywhere. It doesn't seem like a really big deal. Why do you think Dropbox purchased this company?
You know, I kind of agree with you. It's a little bit gimmicky. That said, I think there is this arms race going on right now among some of the bigger tech companies to really capture as many users as they can for photo use. I think, you know, Dropbox released Carousel earlier in the year, and Google Plus has been going crazy with its photo editing and photo album tools. And in a way, it's nothing new. Facebook was really founded on photos. That was the key network effect there. If you upload your photos to a service, you know, there's a kind of prohibitive factor to you leaving it. It really kind of gets you entrenched there. I think we're seeing now with Dropbox and Google, you know, they're trying to ramp up that effect, and Flickr is now adding more space. And I see acquisitions like this kind of fitting into that larger space.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the according to the announcement, of course, that was made by Bubbly, not Dropbox, the app is going to continue to survive. But Dropbox has a history of shutting down apps and services after integration. So if I were a user of this, I would, you know, continue using it, but I wouldn't be counting on it in perpetuity, because Dropbox has quite a history of doing this. Mm-hmm. Well, Google makes most of its revenue from advertising. So when Google bought Nest, which makes smart thermostats, people joked that Google would serve up ads to the thermostats as their business model. But suddenly it's not funny, because Google, in fact, does intend to send display advertising to thermostats, as well as refrigerators, car dashboards, and other Internet of Things devices. They've also talked about putting ads on wearables like Google Glass, type smart glasses, and smartwatches. Google admitted all this in a letter sent to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Seth Figerman, do you want advertising on your thermostat?
You know, I don't even have a thermostat, but if I did, I would not. I will say, I think Google has since come out and clarified a little bit. The letter itself was sent a couple weeks prior to the Nest acquisition. It was more of a theoretical, we could see companies like ourselves doing this, and less about them saying specifically on Nest. And I think they've come out now and said, you know, Nest, that's not in the plans. But what they have said is there's clearly an opportunity to expand the definition of mobile ads to include all of these, you know, wearables and kind of Internet of Things products. And, you know, maybe in the next few years, they're right. Whether it's Google or Microsoft or any other company, we might see ads all around us.
Well, there are two facts to keep in mind. The first fact is that advertising spreads and spreads and spreads and ends up on places that you never anticipated in the past. They show up on shopping carts and on sidewalks, and eventually there's going to be advertising and marketing, as we've reported on the show, on the moon. So, you know, having ads on a Nest thermostat is probably something that can't be ruled out. The other point to consider is the fact that people complain that products like the Nest thermostat and Google Glass and smartwatches are elitist, expensive devices that are essentially creating a digital divide, and poorer people can't afford them. So advertising could actually lead to a situation that enables people to have these devices for free or for a very low cost, and it's a kind of democratizing effect, because even if you don't use the ads, even if you're not influenced by these ads, somebody is paying for them with their purchasing power and enabling lots of people to use products and services that they otherwise wouldn't be able to do. So maybe it's actually a good thing to have ads on everything. I don't know. I'm going to keep an open mind on this. Personally, I'm not thrilled with advertising everywhere, but it does have a practical effect.
How often do you look at your thermostat, though? So, right. I mean, there could be an ad there. I wouldn't know, because I never look at it, especially if it's something like Nest, where you set it and you forget it in a perfect world.
Exactly. It'd be a better business model if they had a not-so-smart thermostat.
Right.
And when they want some ad revenue, they just turn the temperature down in your house. You go scrambling to the thing. And it's like, before you can warm up, you got to, you know, click here.
Yeah, do this CAPTCHA and click here. And
that's right. Punch the monkey. It could get really ugly. Well, we've reported in the past about the upcoming Motorola Moto 360 smartwatch. It's the best known round smartwatch in development. It runs on Google's Android Wear platform. Today, we learned that Motorola is crowdsourcing watch face designs. A contest called the Moto 360 Design Face-Off, which is a great name for a contest, calls on everyone and anyone to submit their ideas for the ultimate watch face. And, you know, this is a really cool thing. Now, the way the contest works is that people can just go to their Google Plus profile. They also have a Google Plus page that has information and links to the actual contest. And, you know, choose one of the official template PSDs to get started. You can design your watch face. Now, you can see that if you're watching the video, you see the one on the right. I don't think you use the official PSD. I don't think that's
looks pretty official to me.
It looks like it was done with a crayon and a fist.
It's just a low res watch face.
Yeah, very low. Well, maybe, that's the look. They're actually handbags and stuff that look like they've been drawn by a cartoonist.
Right.
So maybe that's what he's going after there. But then you post it in the Google Plus community, And then, you know, they haven't really announced what they're going to do with the watch faces. I mean, I guess they're keeping their options open. I can imagine they would use some of them and offer some of them as either downloads or by default on the smartwatch. But the winner, I believe, gets a free watch when they announce a winner. Again, we don't know what they're going to do with the winner. Seth Figerman, this is a great idea, don't you think? I mean, here they are crowdsourcing the design of watch faces. I think it's a great idea.
I think it's kind of a win-win. They get more word of mouth by doing it, and they get some free ideas in the process. I don't know how many people are on Google Plus right now checking this out, but if it spreads to more social networks, I could see it getting a little bit of traction at a time when I think people are still trying to figure out whether smartwatches are here to stay, and if so, which one to get.
Well, it highlights one of the coolest things about smartwatches, especially one like the Moto 360, which is round, and it looks like pretty close to a regular watch because he's round, and it could look really cool. And of course, the early CGI renderings of it look fantastic because they created in software, of course, they created a design that looked like a classic mechanical watch. But it raises the fact that with smartwatches that have, you know, relatively high resolution screens, your watch can look like anything at all. You can have one of those crazy Japanese faces that you have to memorize how to read it. You can have a really elegant looking one. You can switch it for different activities. You go sailing, you can do a nautical one. If you're a pilot, you can do a pilot's watch. You can just flip them as easily as anything else because it's just software. I think it's a brilliant marketing scheme, if nothing else. And hopefully we'll see some really cool designs coming out of it. So who knows?
Well, I do think that the Motorola watch, at least the design that I've seen, is the first one or one of the first ones I've seen that doesn't look like one of those old bulky Timex watches that people wore in fourth grade. Most of the smartwatches to date, in my mind, haven't looked particularly elegant. This one, I think, at least passes the test of whether or not it had smart capabilities. You might still want to buy it for the design. And I think that's the test that a lot of these watches and wearables will have to meet going forward.
Well, it's going to be an interesting holiday season because, of course, people are going to be buying these. There are going to be multiple smartwatches on the market. And hopefully, for those of you looking for a gift for your favorite tech news anchor, you know, I have my eye on that Moto 360. That's a sweet-looking piece of kit. Well, Mark Gurman is reporting on 9to5 Google that Facebook is planning a smartphone app that can identify TV shows and music playing in the background. It's designed to enable Facebook users to easily share what they're watching or listening to, even if they're not doing it online, and also enable Facebook to harvest every scrap of user data it possibly can. Gurman points out that Apple is planning a similar feature for Siri, which is being built in partnership with Shazam. And, of course, Google Now identifies shows and songs like it's a bodily function. This is, of course, here to stay. This whole process of your devices listening to everything you're doing and identifying what it is you're listening and watching. Seth Figerman, this is something we're really going to have to get used to. Our devices are going to know what we're listening to and watching. It's just it's just going to happen on everything you use.
It's probably true. I mean, so far this is all opt-in, so we don't have to get too paranoid yet. But and the Facebook news has since been confirmed by Facebook. For them, it certainly makes sense. I think they're competing in this real-time entertainment market. This gives them another way to find out what you as a user listen to, what you like to watch, and also it incentivizes you to share stuff on the network. I think what's really interesting is to see what happens with Shazam itself. I tried reaching out to them earlier, and so far they're not commenting on this news, but you know, this is a company that's planning to IPO in the future, and it's looking more and more like this might be a feature and not a standalone company if every other major company is just integrating a version of it.
And, of course, one of the things that they'll do with this information is triangulate other points of data. So, for example, if you're listening to a certain type of song or you watch a certain TV show, that's not particularly useful for creating custom ads just for you. But if they also know your age, your gender, you know, your travel history, the books that you've downloaded and bought, all this other information, plus what you watch or listen to, that starts to build a picture of you that enables them to serve custom tailored advertising, which is probably, you know, I hate to say it, is probably a good thing because it's better than irrelevant advertising, as long as they keep it safe and don't, you know, sell it to the highest bidder or whatever. So it's really an interesting development. I really get a lot out of the feature on Google Now. Listening to a song, what song is this? It listens, it tells you what the song is. Pretty cool. I kind of like these features.
Not sure I trust Facebook with the information, but that's just Well, we told you yesterday about Google Plus Stories, which is a feature that automatically creates interactive photo albums using the photos and videos uploaded to Google Plus. Well, today, SlashGear's Chris Burns reports that Google's done some more photo features that do the opposite of automation. The first is called Motions. Unlike AutoAwesome, which one of the things AutoAwesome does is it selects multiple pictures and creates an animated GIF or GIF, your pronunciation may vary, Google Plus Motions lets you choose which pictures will be animated. So you just go in and say, okay, these five pictures, animate those, which is great because AutoAwesome, of course, makes that choice itself, and sometimes it throws in the bad picture that kind of ruins the whole animation. This way you can control it. The same thing goes for Google Plus Mixes, which lets you decide which pictures to add to a photo collage. Of course, AutoAwesome's one of its less known features is that it'll build a sort of a Brady Bunch photo collage. It's stacking photos all over the place. Now you can control that. So that's a really nice feature as well. Well, in just a sec, we're going to close up the show, but first I want to tell you about Gazelle. Gazelle wants to buy your used gadgets. Why do they want to do that? Because they're going to put it back into circulation. That phone sitting around in your drawer or garage or whatever is problematic for a number of reasons. First of all, it's like cash money that you are not spending, and that's a problem for you. But it's also bad for the environment because ultimately, if you wait and wait and wait until nobody would ever want to use that device, it just becomes a toxic piece of junk that goes in a landfill somewhere or gets taken apart by somebody. What Gazelle will do is they'll put it back into circulation. Remember that the only environmentally friendly smartphone is the one that's never built. And if Gazelle puts your old device back into circulation, then that's one smartphone that doesn't have to be constructed. It's great for the environment. So use Gazelle, and here's how you do it. Just go to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com, find your item, tell Gazelle what the condition is, bad condition, great condition, whatever, and then they'll give you a price. They know exactly what it's worth, and you'll be surprised by how much they'll pay you for these old devices that you've already decided are of no use to you personally. And it's super easy. You don't have to lick a stamp. You don't have to fill out an address, nothing. They'll send you a box, and in that box is a sticker. You just put your phone in there. You put the sticker on the outside of the box, give it back to your mailman, and off it goes. And you get paid fast by a check. You can get paid by PayPal, or the option that I use is the Amazon gift card option, because, of course, you can end up buying stuff on Amazon anyway. That gets you 5% more than the quote that you get from Gazelle. So that's a really, really great option. It's also safe because they'll wipe your data for free. So if you have personal data on there and you don't want to get it in the wrong hands, don't worry. Gazelle will erase it for you in a very thorough and professional manner so that there's no risk that your data will get in the wrong hands. So find out what your Apple or Android device is worth. Just take a minute. Go to gazelle.com and find out. And do it now because your device may lose value the longer you wait. Well, Seth Figerman, that's the tech news today. I want to thank you for coming on at very short notice, and you're great on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll have to have you back again very soon. Now, where can people find your work?
You can find me on Mashable.com, or you can find me on Twitter at S Figerman, F-I-E-G-E-R-M-A-N.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, you can subscribe to Tech News Today at twit.tv/TNT, and we encourage you to do so. You can also subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/TechNewsToday. Follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV, and we want to hear from you. Just comment on Twitter or Google Plus using the hashtag Tech News Today. You can also send us an email at tnt@twit.tv or leave us voicemail by calling 260-TNT-SHOW. I read that email stream and those voicemails every single day. And don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.